Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Good morning, folks. We've got a great show lined up for you today, Wednesday, November the 12th. EJ Lagasse, head chef at Emeralds, the recipient of 2 stars from Michelin, the first ever in the city of New Orleans, and the first ever for a head chef, the youngest head chef, to actually command a 2-star Michelin restaurant. A lot of broken records. We'll get a chance to speak with EJ at 12:30. And at 12:15, we'll visit with Justin Kennedy, who is the GM of Parkway Bakery and Tavern. We've all been there, right? And they were on the Bib Gourmand list for their excellence in dining and customer service as well. Almost opposite ends of the culinary experience, right? Very kind of neighborhood restaurant as opposed to a white linen restaurant that EJ commands. So we'll get an opportunity to talk to both of these individuals about this incredibly exciting news, the first ever, really changing the course of history from a culinary perspective in the city of New Orleans. We'll visit with also Alice Glenn during that hour, Executive Vice President of New Orleans and Company, and we'll talk about how they have been assisting in trying to elevate our cultural assets globally via these prominent global honors to include the Michelin Guide, the of the American South, UNESCO, Creative Cities of Music, and hosting Bocuse d'Or and Pastry World Cup in July of 2026. We've done it once. They had such an incredible experience. They're coming back. And these are great things to talk about. I so look forward to visiting with all of these folks. In the 11 o'clock hour, Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. We've got a lot of great things to talk about, and he brings with him Andrew Albert, Programs Director for the Idea Village, and we'll talk about what's going on there. At 10:30, Melissa Landry and Gavin Roberts from the Pelican Institute Center for Energy Policy will talk about whether or not the lawsuit abuse has been undermining Louisiana's economy, and showing how a decade of coastal litigation has driven away investment, reduced production, and cost energy jobs, based on a study done by Dr. Gavin Roberts out of Weber State University. So we will look at this analysis and updates that he has given. A couple of things that I wanted to talk about this morning. There was an interesting article, and I couldn't agree more with some of the observations made by the authors of the article in NOLA.com this morning, and about the incoming administration of Helena Moreno. The article was written by Blake Patterson and James Finn, and it talks about how Mayor-elect Moreno is stepping into the role as the leader right now in advance of January inauguration ceremony, January 12th, actually. I will remind you that my birthday of January 11th, that I don't talk about very often, but I have here recently, is the last day of the Cantrell administration. It may be the best gift I've ever received in my what will then be 68 years of life on this planet Earth. And I don't say that to be funny. I'm serious. I am dead serious, because this city has ended up in that proverbial overused word, defining moment, and it is. And we have an opportunity to right the ship, and I certainly hope that everyone gets behind the Moreno administration in doing so. Is she going to be perfect in everything? Absolutely not. I don't believe that she even thinks that. She understands the limitations that are out there. Will she make all the right decisions? Who knows? Probably not. Most leaders make mistakes. You learn from them. You don't dwell on them. You move on. You try and right the ship. And I think she has exhibited that for the major part of her political life. And that's why I think there was a strong following behind her. I, for one, thought it would be impossible for her to win in the first. I was wrong. I admit it. I just thought that there were a lot of headwinds to overcome, but she did it. And I think that's a testament not only to the manner in which she conducted herself during the course of her service on the New Orleans City Council, but the organization that she brought forward relative to her campaign. They did a lot of things right, and the others didn't do a lot of things and did a lot of things wrong. And that's an indication and emblematic of one's organizational skills, assessing the landscape, developing messaging, and more importantly, executing. And that's what this is really all about. But she's kind of in a little bit of a precarious position right now. She's not the mayor, right? So she's having to do things with multiple degrees of separation from being in the primary role and having the authority to act quickly and be decisive and make decisions on behalf of the city. She's very limited. But quite frankly, in the short period of time between the election and now, she's accomplished a lot. She's been able to move the needle as to how people are viewing the city of New Orleans before she has taken one official act, which is also a testament to her understanding this process, the pitfalls, and how to meander, and as Tiny Tim said, tiptoe through the tulips, because that's exactly what she's doing. And the only reason I bring that up this morning is that I want people to recognize the limitations that are there structurally for the incoming mayor. And I thought it was a great article by Blake Patterson and James Finn in kind of laying out the landscape a little bit of what the expectations have been and what people are already looking at. And unfortunately, many are looking at her as the mayor already, and she's not. And that's why I said this is kind of a tough position to be in, but she seems to be handling it well. And obviously she drew upon her connections and understanding of Baton Rouge, the hodgepodge of politics that exists there, the different and varying ideologies, how they interact, how that construct works, and she's been able to meander through that. And a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle are saying incredibly positive things about the manner in which she has conducted herself. I think she understands not only the deficiencies of the city, I think she understands the challenges at Baton Rouge and has to come about and craft a compromise, a solution that's going to make sense moving forward, and one that's not going to have a chilling effect on her ability to govern, make nimble decisions, quick decisions, important decisions, as this city attempts to move forward. You've heard me say this before, and I'll say it again. We've got one shot at this. One. And we got to get it right. And, you know, we got to be deliberate, but we got to take our time. We got to do the appropriate assessment. It can't be a shotgun, scattergun approach. It has to be surgical in nature, backed up by data, and articulated and completely transparent to the public. And it'll be a win-win. Now, that may sound like a lot. That's either in your wheelhouse or it isn't, right? And just from afar, as having watched Helena's political career. I think all of those tools are in her wheelhouse. I think she's has utilized those tools over and over again. And I think that she has a comfort level in executing with the utilization of those tools. You can't say that about a lot of people in politics. You've heard me say you got to embrace the consequence. You can't fear it. If you fear the consequences, you end up in this state of inertia. You're not willing to make the tough decisions. You're not willing to consume political capital. What I'm hearing about what she's talking about, I'm very encouraged by it because I think she is going to embrace the consequence. Because I also believe that she is going to have to is willing to make those tough decisions. Does it mean that the landscape and the picture of city government remains static through her first four years, and if she runs for re-election and is fortunate enough to get re-elected 8 years? No, I think it's going to be very dynamic. And as revenues grow and efficiencies we're able to gain, I think it's going to be interesting to watch to see how these things change and what they yield, the results, and what does it mean? I think it's going to mean a climate of growth, a revitalization, a spiritual movement in many cases, because there's no doubt if you stop 8 out of 10 people in the city of New Orleans, we're down and out. I mean, that's what I hear. I talk to people all the time. I'm in the city a lot. I'll be dining in the city this afternoon. Can't wait. One of the restaurants that I think that's been recognized and looking very forward to it. And I my little bucket list is to hit every one of them. I've probably been to 80% of them, but I'm going to hit the rest. Because I want to help and celebrate their recognition, their success. I love to watch other folks succeed. It's the same way I feel about Helena Moreno. And I'm confident that we will. And I think one of the takeaways for me from Blake Patterson and James Finn's article is, you know, just keep in mind the difficulties, the challenges, the little bit of the predicaments that she finds herself in. It's natural to rally around the new leader coming in, but she's not going to be there for what, till January 12th, 2 months from today, right? 2 months from today, does she raise her right hand and take the oath of office as the new mayor leading the city of New Orleans? It's a long time through the holiday period. And there's a lot of things that have to happen on the front end. I hope and pray that the Cantrell administration still will remain open and transparent in sharing information with the incoming mayor, because this is a critical time. The more that we can get out in front of these issues right now, the faster the recovery can be once Mayor-elect Moreno takes the oath of office. Now, that may be a lot to ask for of the incumbent mayor. If it were me, I would be doing everything. I would be sitting down with the incoming mayor and saying, "What is it that you want me to do? What do we want to do? How can we create this landscape? And what plants do we have to plant? Where do we have to be? What do we have to do in order to make this transition seamless so that you can hit the deck running?" And we get a lot of these things and this exploratory stuff and questions answered well in advance of you taking the oath of office. If this mayor really wants to leave a legacy, opportunity over the next 60 days to create a legacy of cooperation, collaboration, and a willingness to think out of the box and not be parochial or territorial relative to her 8 years in office, and forgive, forget, move on, and work in the best interest of those that live in the city of New Orleans. That would be a huge legacy to have, quite frankly. They don't always work out that way. we kind of play at these things a lot of times. But to give that person the opportunity right now would be unbelievable. And there are a lot of people independent of the political process that are involved in this at the present time that would immediately recognize it because of the political experience that they have and they bring to the forefront. They will see something that they've never seen before. Right? An incredible last-minute legacy item for the Cantrell administration. I'm hopeful. I hope she's listening. You could right a lot of wrongs in 60 days and set a template moving forward, because this is a critical period of time, a crossroads, a juncture that will make what our recovery would be from a financial perspective so much, create a higher likelihood of success in a shorter period of time. I guess that's the best way to say it. And you could legitimately brag about it. Legitimately, because everyone would recognize it. No doubt about it. Maybe. We'll see. I mean, it may be asking a lot of someone, especially in light of a lot of the other difficulties that the mayor has going on at this same time. But the reality is, if you want to leave a legacy item, that would be one that I would suggest you work on right now. But we'll see. We'll see how this plays out. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll visit with the folks from the Pelican Institute, the Institute Center for Energy Policy, about how coastal lawsuit abuse may be undermining Louisiana's economy, based on a report by Dr. Gavin Roberts from Weber State University. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Melissa Landry, Vice President and Director of the Pelican Institute Center for Energy Policy, and also Gavin Roberts, PhD, Associate Professor of Economics, Chair of the Goddard School, Fellow Weber State University, Senior Fellow at the Pelican Institute. Gavin and Melissa, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us.
So let's talk about this update to a previous report that was done by Weber State University by Dr. Gavin Roberts. And Melissa, if you want, lead us in.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I know you're very familiar, and your listeners probably are too, that over the last decade or so, Louisiana, in partnership with coastal parishes and some private attorneys, working on behalf of the state and local governments, have engaged and filed over 40 lawsuits against hundreds of energy producers claiming decades-old oil and gas operations contributed and caused coastal erosion. Those cases have been making their way. It's been over a decade of courtroom battles. And what this report really illustrates is the economic impact that this litigation has has had has contributed to the loss of investments and shrinking production and fewer energy jobs, wages, and royalty revenues here in Louisiana. At the Pelican Institute, which is Louisiana's leading free market think tank, we strive to really put forth free market policies that help to position Louisiana for success to compete in the global marketplace. And really the end goal of that is really to create opportunities for every human being in our state to thrive. And this is obviously had a significant impact on a major sector of Louisiana's economy. And Dr. Roberts' initial report back in 2019 made a compelling case for the impact that this litigation is having on the state's oil and gas industry. And I think the report that we released last week shows very clearly how that theory has played out over time.
So, Dr. Roberts, to you, I read the report. I saw the data about the downturn, the economic trends, some of which are somewhat greater than the national trends as it relates to oil and gas production for a host of reasons. How do we draw the conclusion, though, and what data are we providing relative to lawsuits and the nature of the lawsuits to this downturn?
I think really to get the most clear picture of the effect of the lawsuits is we can look to the original report. And what I was able to do is, it's kind of a nice setup because, I mean, it's not a nice setup in terms of the consequences of Louisiana's economy. It's a nice setup because there are very similar regions where oil and gas can be developed, very nearby those regions which these Louisiana lawsuits impacted. So the simplest thing I did, I was able to collect data on individual wells, natural gas and oil, and just to look and see what's happening to trends in drilling in these areas. And it's nice because once you get far enough offshore, you are no longer in an area that's subject to lawsuits. So what we observe is before these specific coastal lawsuits were in play, sort of leading up to 2013, the trends in drilling between those Louisiana areas that would be subject to the lawsuits and those areas in the federal region which would not be subject to the lawsuits, we observed very similar trends in drilling before the lawsuits occurred. Immediately after the lawsuits begin to occur, we see a large fall off of drilling in the Louisiana area where we would expect the lawsuits to have their impact. Well, at the same time, we actually see a small increase in a continued robust drilling in the federal areas. What I kind of just described is a very common model in economics called difference in differences. And then we also looked at things like, okay, well, we know that around that same time period, oil prices fell considerably. So that's why it's important, of course, to make comparisons where we say, well, oil prices affect regions outside of where the lawsuits were having an impact. So we do a lot to try to control and make comparisons that can be apples to apples in that environment.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
So how do we account for what happened in, you know, relative to the BP spill, which actually consumed a probably about a 6 or 7, maybe even 8 year period of time starting in April of 2010? How does that impact what you've looked at? And is there a tail to that event that continues to contribute to maybe some of this downturn?
I imagine that that did have some impacts in and of itself. I think that in that case, and I think there's an important distinction that comes out, in that case, it was very clear what the cause of the spill was and who was responsible for that cause. Sure. Coastal lawsuits are quite different from that because the number one cause of coastal degradation in Louisiana is not, in fact, dredging or drilling for oil wells. It has more to do with what's happening upstream on the Mississippi and other river systems. And so that comes back to what I was saying about the trend comparisons. So certainly both the federal and Louisiana offshore region would have been affected to the extent that they were by that BP oil spill. And we compare trends during that period, in fact, starting in 2009. And so I think the first figure in the original report sort of tells the story I'm telling you in words now, is we see comparable trends in both regions between 2010 and 2013. So to the extent of that an impact, that impact was very similar in both regions. It is not until the onset of the coastal lawsuits where we see that divergence in these trends, and it's the divergence that we would expect. Coastal lawsuits impact the expected cost of drilling in a way that's very uncertain, which I think is important. And that uncertainty leads to higher costs. Businesses don't like that type of uncertainty. Businesses can deal with risk sometimes, but uncertainty is a different ballgame because the difference between uncertainty and risk is it's quantifiable. And I just want to tie that to something really quickly I said before, driving that difference, because some people have claimed, look, once we take care of this, of the responsible parties for this coastal degradation, then new development will come. Because they'll say, look, you punished the guys that did this. I don't have to worry about that. That is not really the case for the coastal lawsuits, because as I mentioned before, it is not the one factor. However, it's definitely being treated as if it is in many ways in these lawsuits. So that is the uncertainty, because it's not clear at all that the types of changes that would need to occur across the board, not those specific to oil and gas development, are going to go away anytime soon. So it's not clear at all that these cases won't come up. It's easier to say, hey, look, it's this rich oil developer who caused this problem. And so that's the money we're going to go after. And it would be astonishing to me if the oil companies don't respond that way to that uncertainty and say, look, there's just too much uncertainty right now. We need more clear guidance on what our expected costs associated this would be.
What would you say to the detractors that say, well, the very nature of the landscape and the orientation of the manner in which we extracted oil in Louisiana is different than the way we actually do it in most other states? You don't see coastal wetland production like you did in Louisiana, because they just didn't have the amount of acreage that we had in Louisiana of coastal wetland production in those states. So it's not a apples to apples comparison.
I think that's a fair question. If I may, what I would say in response to that is the operations that are at issue in these coastal lawsuits are not were not carried out under the cover of darkness. These operations were conducted legally.
Sure.
Many of them were directed by the federal government during dating as far back to World War II, when the entire oil and gas industry was working, under directives of the federal government in support of America's efforts to win the war. So the fact of the matter is that these operations were conducted legally, and the very same parishes in the state of Louisiana that has benefited from those operations for, dating back to, World War II, were responsible for, regulating and monitoring those operations, and they did. And it is only now, under this new sort of legal theory that is being asserted by attorneys, private outside counsel working on behalf of these state and local governments now, that there's been this new, or this attempt to rewrite history and assert this new novel legal theory.
Yeah, and I'm not advocating on behalf of that. What the point I was simply trying to make is, I try to put myself in the shoes of the oil producers, and given the choice of drilling a well in wetlands, with not only what's going on with these lawsuits, but with wetland mitigation, wetland protection, this estuarial protection and everything else, over the years, and the amount of federal oversight and regulatory rules that have changed, it would seem to me that if I had the opportunity to drill a well, for instance, on land in Texas, that's where I go. Less risk, ease of administration, don't have, Jones Act involved, don't have a whole lot of different things, even at the federal level, involved by doing so, and less regulatory provisions, both at the federal and state level, because I'm not in wetlands. And I'm just curious, how do we pull that out of what this consideration is as well? I mean, if you just look at the abandoned well program in the state that's been a disaster, I mean, we all know that we've been had wellheads that have been struck by vessels, and we've had spills, thankfully not as large as the BP spill, but obviously there's abandoned equipment there that has led to some degradation of the marshes as a result of the amount of the oil that was spilled. Going back to what you said about BP being different, I guess you could say the same thing about these types of things. We know that abandoned piece of equipment is responsible for something, right? Unlike some Absolutely. Of the other coastal litigation suits that are out there. But when I look at it in its totality, what do you say about, if I'm assessing that risk, coupled with obviously the litigation, there are a whole lot of host of other reasons why I might go drill a well somewhere else.
I totally agree with that. And I think, sorry, Melissa, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry, Dr. Roberts.
So I would say the first thing is that I think it would be really hard. We could do an analysis of how those risks vary from state to state. It's not clear from me and my experience that those would necessarily be worse in Louisiana than some other places. For example, I've done a lot of research in Wyoming. New risks emerge there related to environmental policy. So the sage grouse is something that comes up often in those cases. Now, that's definitely bringing an uncertainty. But I think the important part in terms of the analysis in this report is, to the extent we believe there was major changes in the risk assessment on the part of drillers that you mentioned, where did the changes in risk assessment come from over the period of the data that we were looking at? I looked at different evidence of what other changes were occurring this time. During the time period that we assessed the initial impact of drilling, I didn't see anything that would have led to a dramatic change in that risk assessment. I absolutely agree with you that developers are certainly thinking about those risks across space and across time. What happened in Louisiana is there was a major change in that assessment across time related to the lawsuits, and that's what changed them at that particular time. Absolutely, developers are thinking about how those risks vary across space as well. What's nice about the difference in differences model I described before that we tried to help with exactly what you're thinking about in two different ways. One is I'm not going to go look at distant states and compare trends there. What I'm going to look at, and this is the original where we made the initial causal analysis report, I explicitly did not look in other states far away because I considered them to be too different for a variety of reasons, probably more related to productivity than those types of risks, but those types of risks are obviously concerning as well. Mm-hmm. But then to the extent those differences across space are existing, as long as they're relatively constant over our sample period, then that helps us attribute the cause of this particular change. And that's sort of the reason people that use this difference in differences model is to try to control for fixed differences of the type that you're talking about. Now, obviously, those things can change, and that part of the assessment is, hey, were there any major changes during this period that we would expect to differentially impact drilling in Louisiana? Yeah, there was one, and it was the onset of these major coastal lawsuits.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
you were gonna, Melissa.
I would just,
yes.
If I may, I would just add, the oil and natural gas industry has been operating. It is a cornerstone of Louisiana's culture and economy for over a century. They have also been very strong partners with our state, providing jobs for families and investing hundreds of millions of dollars in our communities and the coast and the environment. The fact of the matter is that, the state and coastal parishes don't need to sue energy producers into investing in our coast. They already are. Energy producers are the number one private investor in our coast. And the reality is that every dollar that's spent on litigation is a dollar that's not spent on production and a dollar that's not spent on restoration. And, this problem is best solved when we are all working together. Instead of these endless courtroom battles, it's clear that Louisiana, would far better benefit both our economy and our coast by encouraging collaborative solutions between the industry, state and local governments, and in support, in advancing free market innovation and solutions in support of our Louisiana's coastal master plan.
Yeah, there's no bigger supporter of the oil and gas industry than I am. I've defended them over and over again. I just like to ask these probative questions, especially in light of the fact that our governor, our attorney general, the attorney general specifically has said in the Chevron case that there was causation. I mean, they have stood toe to toe against the Trump administration and many of the political Republican activists that have criticized them, saying that suit should not have played out the way it did. So there's a huge difference of opinion as it relates to some of these individual pieces of litigation. I don't know if the overall arching theme and strategy of this is legitimate or not. But when I look, at the data, Louisiana has declined in oil production since its high of 566 million barrels produced in 1970. And it's never been able to regroup or reach that level ever again, which was long in advance of litigation of this type, where it was more of a freewheeling environment, very much encouraged by both local and state government, and to where we find ourselves today. And we've had some anomaly events like 2014, when we laid off 20,000 oil workers. We never recovered from it. There was no interest in recovering in 2014, which was in advance of the litigation. So I'm just curious at the breadth and depth of other indicators and other attitudes that may be existing out there as it relates to Louisiana, where in other states, in Texas, they have been able to recover. They've been more nimble and they've been more durable than we've been. I don't know why. I don't know all the reasons.
I know there's
some big blue water BP projects that they're the beneficiary of right now. The brown water industry in Louisiana is pretty much all but dead. If you don't get the right price, the sweet spot and the price of oil, they're not going to go do workover rigs. So, there's a lot of different things that are out there. But I understand that litigation is a consideration, is one of risk, and is an assessment, because those are absolute costs. Math has no emotion. It doesn't lie. when you got to pay lawyers and pay for litigation, that's real money. I get it. I understand that. It just seems to me there are some other things going on here, and I haven't been able to put my finger on it.
Well, you're absolutely right that there is a significant distinction between development that has happened in Texas and here in Louisiana. And as we see from the data in Dr. Roberts' report and as you've pointed out, the differences. But we know that difference isn't geology. It's policy and the legal climate. Legal and regulatory stability is the single, is one of the primary drivers of investment decisions. And the good news is that by embracing reforms to create a more predictable legal and regulatory climate here in Louisiana, we can reverse this trend and decline in production.
Yeah. Well, there is some other difference, the ability of land drilling versus, over water. I mean, the cost differential's huge. The risk, huge. The daily cost, huge. You take out entire service industries when you're on land as opposed to water. I don't know that Louisiana has the same benefits that Texas has in that regard. But drilling is down in Texas, too. I was reading last week the Fed Reserve out of Dallas's report on energy. It's down. So it's just kind of interesting where this is all going to play out. But I get it. I get the hard dollars. And, if there's an opportunity. And look, I'll say one thing about Dr. Roberts, your report. I didn't realize it was as bad as it is. I'm going to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
As I read these numbers, I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, this sucks. I mean, this is not good.
And I think one thing to your point is that it's absolutely right that the fixed upfront investment is going to be much higher to go to brown water or deep water. Mm-hmm. But then once you divide that investment by the ultimate productivity, that's what drives them there, right? They're going to get much more productivity at the end of that investment. But that exactly the type of an investment that we would expect to be more impacted by a lawsuit. You have a higher relative sunk cost. So I think that what you just explained is that's particularly going to be impacted by lawsuits.
Totally agree with you.
Another quick thing I say is that oil prices crashed in 2014. You may recall, and you mentioned that a lot of Louisiana oil employment was lost during that time. And so that's actually an important compounding factor, because in our analysis, we looked and the unemployment you're referring to happened before the futures prices went down.
Right. Interesting. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. I could talk about this for another hour because I totally enjoy the conversation. Melissa Landry with the Pelican Institute Center for Energy Policy, thank you. And Dr. Gavin Roberts, thank you as well, from Weber State University, in the report. Well done. Really enjoyed reading the data. And as I said before, it made me nervous. It's like, this is not good. But thank you, sir. And Melissa, thank you for joining us. All righty, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.